Okay, we're back and we have some questions for you guys. And let's go with the first question. In Gnosis, we are taught that creation is unity and the universe will compensate every person who is wronged. How do we reconcile this with the notion that doing nothing is doing something, and that if we choose to say nothing, we are siding with the majority? Can you give us any guidance as to what things are best left to the unity of life to sort out, and what things we must actually do something about in order to avoid karma for inaction?
I'll answer that question because I'm the one that mentioned that quote about, you know, doing nothing isn't necessarily doing nothing. We are, you know, siding with the majority. And I just wanted to first answer it in a general respect. This is what first came to me when I read this question, is that we have the teaching in the Gnostic studies that we are in the cycle of samsara, which is 3,000 existences or turns rather. And if we don't work on ourselves, if we don't do the revolution of the consciousness, then at the end of the cosmic day, we go back into the absolute. So we reunify with the absolute, but we don't do it in a conscious way. So in these studies, we are working to fast track that process so that we are able to consciously remanifest in the absolute, to be at one with everything and to have that unity. So in that respect, we can just let things slide and do nothing, and things will reach that balance, because at the end of that cosmic day, that balance is restored again. And so everything, all the things are corrected, all the wrongs are righted, all the rights and stuff like that. So what I would say to that more specifically is that if we're working to revolutionize our consciousness, then we need to become more conscious, whether we are right in our actions or whether we are wrong in our actions. It's in our benefit to actually just not let fear stop us from figuring out what it is that we must do to awaken, or what we shouldn't do to avoid our karma, because that is a really big trap. And it's not saying that we just need to jump in and do things in a reckless manner. Obviously, we need to consult our inner consciousness and our inner being with decisions, but sometimes we don't have any guidance. So in those scenarios, I think just whatever decision we make to do or not to do, to do it consciously and to observe the effects. Sometimes when we do nothing, it's hard to observe the effects, but if we're looking for it, we can actually find it. So it's like that own personal study of our own actions and how they affect other people. So yeah, just not to be afraid, and think, yeah, if we have that concept that we always just have to do nothing, and that is taking us, like giving it all power to our being, and that we do nothing, I just think in my experience isn't always the case, because we are a part of the being. Our vehicle is a part, but it is tricky to know when to act, when not to act. But if we put fear aside, it's a bit easier. Thanks for that question. It was a good one.
Thank you, Diana. Scott, did you want to add something?
Yeah, I think the only other thing to consider is just the necessity or the help then of self-observation. That with self-observation, we can see or have the possibility to be able to see and discern if what the motivation to do or not do in that situation be, if it's coming from the side of the ego, if it's coming from the side of the being that's guiding us to act or not act. And if it's an ego, then we should always go against that.
Okay, thank you. So we will move on to the next question. And this one says, what are some of the practical ways we could discover the limits of our psychological and spiritual capacity?
Well, I can discuss this one again, because that was something that I brought up. So again, this is a good question, and it's probably a big answer, but to get a sense that each of us have individual limits, and so it's something that we have to set out and discover for ourselves. But some practical ways to do it is that if we begin anything, that we first of all have a focus as to what we're trying to do, and then to see as we start to go, as we start to practice, exercise, investigate, whatever it is that we're doing, is to start to see when that starts to diminish, when physically, at whichever level, so physically, vitally, emotionally, mentally, volitionally, consciously, we start to diminish, lose focus, and so on. And so from that, we can start to get a sense of it as to what our limit is. In a way, it's probably easier to understand that physically and then extrapolate that out, that if we want to do something, we want to walk to a particular place, you know, it's quite easy to see our physical limit in terms of our fitness. From there, we can see, you know, an intimate relationship to our vital energy from that perspective. So in any aspect of the work, whether that's transmutation, you know, we have limits for our capacity to transmute the energy in terms of quantity and quality of energy and how well we're able to do that practice. So if we understand or get a sense of what is possible and then we start to do it, we can start to see then when the practice starts to break down and try and identify at what level inside of us, what level of our being, so whether it's physical, psychological or conscious, to see if it's that at that particular practice, it's our will that limits us in that particular area, and to see then which ego is related to that. If it's a mystical practice, the same thing, that we try and do that practice and we see what limits us from achieving success or from overcoming a particular obstacle, to see if it's a physical, energetic, psychological, conscious, you know, understanding of the work that begins to limit us. So as we exert ourselves, we start to reach the boundaries of our capacity, and we then gain that self-understanding and can then learn how to navigate those boundaries.
Okay. Thank you, Scott. So moving on to the next question. I am a new mom. I have a full-time job and I feel exhausted all the time now. It has greatly affected my practices, but I feel the need to sleep or rest during the day in my free time that I have. I feel like my energy is on a consistent low. Is this considered active laziness? And do you have any suggestions for new moms to stay focused on the work through times where our concentration and energy is demanded from so many other things? Thank you. And I believe, Carly, you're going to take this question.
Yeah. So, you know, first of all, I'm coming at this from a few different angles, and my full disclosure is that I'm not a parent. So this is just going to be from my understanding of the work and from seeing other parents, new parents and single parents in Gnosis. So one thing is that we do the work in whatever our circumstances is. So whether we have lots of free time or no free time or whatever, all the different like infinite ways that our lives can manifest, like these are our opportunities. So it's, you know, the circumstances can always be worked with and can always be transmuted to a certain extent. As far as the exhaustion and needing to rest, that's really natural. You know, giving birth is a big, pretty big output on the body, and taking care of an infant is really demanding. So if your body is telling you that you need to rest, just, you know, from the little I know about the situation, it seems pretty wise to just listen to that. And that just in terms of like just the natural cycle of what your body is doing. And then hopefully there'll be some replenishment that happens. And then, you know, just some like more practical suggestions just to kind of throw it out there. Like, you know, it might not now look like long, peaceful, quiet meditation practices. And, you know, it might just look more like silent prayers in little moments. It might look like, you know, just loving your infant, loving your child, and feeling like an embodiment of the Divine Mother and having some devotion in that way. Really working with sublimation. So we have the transmutation of the energy, that kind of like physical, like moving the energy and circulating it. And then there's the sublimation, which can come from transmutation, but doesn't necessarily require it. So sometimes we'll advise women on their menstrual cycle to sort of like bring the energy, not a transmutational, but I mean to like put the attention into the heart and to just work with bringing about like a sublimated state and to kind of transmute the emotional state. And so these aren't things that necessarily have to take place in a formal practice, you know, with like a bunch of set aside time or being in a meditation posture, like, you know, just working with trying to sublimate your day and your emotional state, and then just accepting that having an infant, you know, raising a child, being a new mom, like it does necessitate a lot of, you know, a fair bit of multitasking, a lot of different things going on, and working the full-time job. So that's a lot. But I do just want to say that, like, I do really admire the parents in Gnosis. I really admire their work, and they bring a certain flavor of sacrifice that is unique. So yeah, so just keep working and trying to be conscious. The consciousness is out of time. You know, the consciousness is of eternity. And what comes to mind too is that quote from Confucius is, it doesn't matter how slow you go, just keep going. Just keep going as long as you can, one foot in front of the other. So That's my answer. Thanks for that question. Thanks for writing in.
Thank you, Carly. As you were saying that right now, one thing came to my mind, how Venerable Master Samael did the great work with a family and four children.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's very clear. And then with that quote right now, it's true. I mean, just keep moving forward. Okay, so we'll move on to Scott. This is question four. So it seems that it is much easier to stay where we are rather than to ascend spiritually. To ascend means that we need to change things. How can we calculate the resistance before we go about trying to make a change in our lives that will benefit our spiritual work?
Yeah, so this is, I mean, I think this is fundamental for what we're trying to do, and to see in that it is easier just to stay where we are, but if we do want to ascend, there's a couple of things that we can look at in terms of the use of energy. And so one, to ascend, we need a force that lifts us upward, and in that then we need to, as you asked, calculate, and as I mentioned, calculate the opposing force or the resistance that we'll face as we try to ascend. So this relates to the previous question I touched on in terms of trying to get a sense of our own limits as well. And within that, you know, we can see what is a source of energy that will help us to ascend. And in some ways, this is personal, but there's general comments we can make about that in terms of gnosis. And the principal sources of energy, obviously, is the transmutation. It's like rocket fuel that just, you know, sends us to the stars. And so we have to learn to transmute well. And then we have to learn how to maintain that energy, so that it doesn't dissipate and become lost. And so as we generate that energy and that force and, you know, prayer and yearning, motivation, inspiration, enthusiasm, and then the practices that we have, so transmutation, obviously, meditation, prayer, all of these things send us upwards. And then to calculate the resistance is to see what we will face as we start to ascend. And mostly it will be with the egos. The egos, in terms of calculating the resistance of the ego, is a little hard because we're stepping into the darkness, but we can understand in that sense the principles of the psychological work, that it's inevitable that if we start to investigate a particular ego, it will resist. And so if we understand that process, we just have to constantly be on guard to see where and how then that ego manifests and start to look at it. But the egos also obviously are involved in any activity that we do. So if we're trying to develop concentration, for example, we'll see that there'll be resistance or obstacles that we'll face, and obviously in this context that will be the mind. But we'll also see that to really develop concentration, it takes a concentrated and consistent effort. So we need to be diligent, we need to be persistent, and, you know, resistance and obstacles in that sense can be making sure that we have a schedule, that we're committed to it, and the resistance then will come up externally and internally. And to calculate that is to see how can we fulfill our responsibilities that we have, but yet still not do anything that compromises cultivating that process of developing concentration. Or with astral travel, you know, if we want to have a conscious out-of-body experience, you know, the resistances will be many, that, you know, we need to have that consistency, that we can't let mundane things come up that will take us away from developing concentration and getting closer and closer to that point of sleep and learning to recognize the sensations of sleep arising and the process of projection. And then to see laziness that comes up as a form of resistance inside of us, that fear might come up as a form of resistance into the unknown. So there's many, many things that we can see. The main thing is that we set out, that we generate force, and that we try and then navigate with self-observation, with that understanding inside of us as to where and how we start to waver and dissipate and what obstacles will arise. And then when we recognize an obstacle, to just face it and then utilize the forces and tools that we have at our disposal in Gnosis to see them and overcome them. I think if we really understand this well, we can do anything in the work. And then we see that all of the tools in Gnosis, even the keys, are just means to help us navigate the resistance that we face in life, which will keep us trapped and bound in samsara. So it's a good question.
Okay. Thank you, Scott. Just wondering if anyone else wants to add, or should we move on?
No, I think Scott kind of covered it.
Okay, very well. So we'll move on to the next question. Can you suggest any strategies to help overcome the laziness I am having towards getting up for a practice during the night? I know they are so beneficial for me. However, the laziness is just overpowering in the early hours of the morning. So I'll leave this for whoever wants to answer.
I can answer that question. First thing I wanted to say was that the nighttime practices or the vigil practices are incredibly hard, well, at least in my experience. Some people find it quite easy or manageable. And, you know, I think it goes back to our own capacities and our own energetic values. But because they're so difficult, the resistance is great. Therefore, if we can overcome that, the gain is also really great too. So they're very powerful practices if we're able to overcome that resistance or that laziness or that tiredness. But I can give some recommendations, well, that have been given to me by one of the Gnostic instructors, is that the recommendation is to get enough rest. So allow yourself enough time before you wake up so you actually, your physical body is rested enough so that one can do that practice. We can ask for help before we go to sleep, just, you know, ask our Divine Mother, our being, to be able to help us to wake up at that time to do the practice, or even to wake us up naturally, which is the best way. The other thing is we can just prepare for that in our day. Like, we make this sacred time for us and our being, and we see it in that way. And so it's not like we give ourselves the leftover energies we have for that. We keep that practice in mind as the pivotal practice of our day, and then structure our day so that we're able to have that energy. And I think that some other guidance I've heard is that we can even give ourselves some rest time in the afternoon, like, say, in any afternoon of our day, we can give ourselves rest time so that we can conserve a bit more energy for the nighttime practice, if that's practical within our own routine and structures. So, yeah, that's all I had to say. I'm not sure if anyone else wanted to add to that.
Yeah, something to add is the fatigue is just a part of the work, you know, at many different levels. And I think something that's really helpful is just to not think about it. Obviously, we need to be sensible and not do things that will, you know, adversely affect us. But at the same time, in regards to laziness, thoughts that mobilize feelings that convince us to not get out of bed, we just have to not listen to them. And we decide to get up and we just get up and don't listen to any of the thoughts. In fact, don't even think about it. And don't think about it through the day. Don't think about how tired you are or how tired you will be. That's the door that opens that takes us down that path towards indolence and laziness. So as soon as that feeling or that thought, anything that comes up like that, we just close that door and open the door towards the being and ask for inspiration and enthusiasm and insight and energy and force that will help us to do that practice. And then it becomes a joy. And, you know, tiredness is actually a beautiful feeling. You know, that wonderful feeling when we've really worked hard and physically or psychologically we feel that we've spent our energy. It's a nice feeling just to rest into that fatigue and allow the forces to recoup. You know, in that context of some of the other questions, is to start to learn our capacities and our limitations and just flow with that cycle, but just don't give in to any of the thoughts and emotions.
Okay, Scott, well, it looks like you covered this question, but it came in during your interview. And so we'll just mention the question because we don't want to leave any questions out. So how does one improve laziness with maintaining our concentration during meditation or being in the present moment?
I don't quite understand the question, but if it's overcome laziness, by using concentration and self-observation, you know, they're similar, we can see that if we're concentrated, we can see when things come up that will open those doors to laziness. And if we can stay concentrated, we don't take our mind or our focus off the task that we're doing. So in the context of this question, if we're meditating on something, let's say we're meditating on a particular ego, or if we're doing a retrospection, or if we're doing some other form of meditation or mantra, the concentration helps us to stay focused and to not get hazy, to lose our focus, to lose the clarity of our concentration. So laziness can subtly, you know, just divert all of that.
Okay, so I believe this is the end of the questions. I don't know, guys, if you guys want to share any closing thoughts overall on the talk, I'll let you guys do it one by one.
I just wanted to say that it's been a very interesting process preparing for this talk, observing the laziness that comes up, the resistance that has come up for this particular topic. So that's really interesting, you know, probably the most helpful for each of us presenters to experience that. And yeah, just inviting everyone to really look deep and find that aspect of laziness that they can work on, because we've all got it to some extent. And yeah, I hope that it's bears fruit to the consciousness and everyone. Thanks for the questions as well to everyone. They've been really great, thought provoking.
Nothing to add for me, just to say thank you to Carly and Diana and to Annabelle and Elio. It's always just great to be part of this, and also to the listeners and their questions. It's great.
Yeah, just this was, like Diana says, this was really good experience. I feel like the prep time has been really valuable, and you know, the ego is just kind of like, they just thrive in the dark and hidden and in isolation. And so getting a chance to work on this ego that's, you know, can be like just hidden and weirdly embarrassing and stuff like that, and actually just bring it out to light more and talk about it and share it. And so many people wrote questions. So it's obviously something that is like striking a chord with people. So yeah, I'm really grateful for the participation and being able to be a part of it.
And I'll share a comment with you guys. This just came in. It says, "This has been one of the most helpful talks on Kuradi Radio ever. Thank you all so much." So thank you guys once again for doing this joint effort. We know that it took some planning, some coordinating, and doing the talk in itself is challenging, you know, taking turns and all that. So a job very well done, guys. Thank you.
And we're in all really different time zones too.
Exactly. I think a round of applause for all of you, and especially for Scott for working at 2 a.m.
Yes.
In the morning, speaking about working on, should I say it? Congratulations, guys.
Thank you.
Okay, all. Well, thank you all for your questions, and we'll join us next time for our next live activity on Kuradi Radio. Take care, all.